movies and booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
On the subject of motion sickness, we were talking about these glasses that can stop you getting sick. Kevin says motion sickness is caused not looking out. On a boat, someone cooking or navigating may start to feel sick, but if they're given a turn at steering, they'll feel better. These glasses have been available in the leisure boating community for years. And you're right, Kevin, because I think they're kind of based on something that has been used in the leisure boating community. Which sounds, I don't know why that sounds kind of vaguely like wife swapping, but it does. That probably says more about me than anything else. And we were talking as well to an intimacy coordinator, Chelsea Pace, at the start of the show. And a texter says, the actress from The Affair, Louise Wilson, left her role on the show due to how the intimacy coordinator was treating her. And that's kind of right, but in another sense, completely wrong. Her name is Ruth Wilson, and she actually left the show. There was no intimacy coordinator. That was the problem. It was the showrunner she had a problem with. And I think for the first four series, she was basically kept repeatedly asking the question, how come I'm naked and he's not? To which she never got an answer. And there was a fairly toxic atmosphere there. And eventually she did leave the show. And I think they wrote in that she had to be murdered. But even at that, there was a row because when she was leaving the show, they wanted her to be raped and murdered. But she eventually resisted on that. And on the subject of we did play that clip of the guy who rubbed soya sauce on his happy place and claimed he could then taste the soya sauce. Texter says, now, somebody did text in to say you don't have taste receptors on your scrotum, but somebody else texted in to say that you do have taste receptors on your testicles, which is utterly baffling if you think about it. So here is possibly the killer argument here. So brace yourself for this. It is quite vivid. I had a cycling accident years ago. You can see where it's coming. While sprinting, I went back in the saddle too quickly and a bit inaccurately. This resulted in my scrotum being ripped apart from the saddle tearing in the back and through the front of my scrotum. I had my testicle hanging out. I had my testicle in my hand as I had to place it back into my scrotum. Honestly, I can say from experience, I wasn't able to taste anything off my dirty hands. So there you go. That resolves that particular debate. I'm delighted to say we are joined once again by Esther McCarthy and Dean McGuinness for Movies and Booze. We have to go to, because Dean was already texting about this or tweeting about this. Have you dipped your testicles into beer?
I have not as yet dipped my testicles into beer. It hasn't really been
as yet. The night's young yet.
It hasn't been on the bucket list to do. But in terms of flavour, there's a couple of things in terms of the science of what they're doing. First of all, a lot of what we detect in flavour is detected through our nose.
Yes.
So I'm guessing if you are going to the trouble of dipping your testicles into soy sauce, that there's a chance that there are volatiles that are going around in the air.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, I assume he was smelling it. Really. Yeah.
You get a certain amount of sensation transference, and in your mind you tend to attach the flavour to the thing that you notice that you're tasting. So when you taste something in your nose, if it's in your mouth, you project the idea that you're experiencing the flavour into your mouth, even though the receptors are in your nose that are picking up a certain number of the flavours.
Yeah.
But in terms of receptors for soy sauce, what you'd be looking at would be primarily umami and salty. And there are two flavours that you get on the tongue. Now, in terms of bitterness, the receptors for bitterness go from our tongue right down our esophagus and all the way to our anus.
So he was actually tasting it with his ass, not with his balls.
Well, that's probably what he was doing.
Yeah. It didn't have far to travel.
It could have been that maybe there was a splash or something like that. In Darwinian terms, just kind of extending the science, generally women are better tasters than men because in their...
Tread very carefully with your next sentence, I would say.
At the hunter-gatherer phase of our existence, men would have been more responsible for collecting the food. Women would have been more responsible for making sure that the food was good enough for children.
Yes.
Because they would have had more of a nurturing role at the time, having given birth to the children. So women tend to be able to pick up flavour more than men. But at the... The other thing that validates the idea that the taste goes down is that spice. If you've had a particularly spicy meal.
Well, yeah, but not in that sense.
Then you can think, but that particular flavour sensation is a pain sensation, and it's actually related to the sensation that you have with CO2. When you're detecting CO2 in beer, that's actually a pain sensation as opposed to a taste sensation, but it's interpreted as flavour.
My God, it's a rare day when I think, I'm sorry I asked that question, but... So we have two beers here in front of us, both of which are in rather large bowls, which you can drink from it or do whatever you want, really. The elephant on it makes me worried.
Yeah. Well, normally with delirium, the beer is around 8 to 8.5%. Each of the core delirium beers are 8 to 8.5%. These two are beers that I have been waiting to review for between 18 months and 30 months. One of them was originally launched, but just for the Belgian and French market because it wasn't available in enough volume. And then I was hoping that they'd be into Ireland last year, and it's just literally that they've arrived in the last number of weeks. They're barrel-aged delirium beers. And I picked them out because I'm having a rant about dry January. Mm. And I'm proposing that we should go for January instead.
Yeah. Well, of course, that makes perfect sense.
Off the tongue. So January is drink less, drink better, January.
Right. Okay. Yes. All right. Drink less, but drink better.
Yes.
Is what you're saying.
So
right.
Look for better quality.
I must say that the bottles for this are absolutely beautiful.
They are beautiful. Yeah. And one of the things that's unusual about the bottles, they've used the same bottle for both beers. They're both sheer black bottles, so they're painted bottles with screen printing on them. And the distinction between the two beers is entirely in the encapsulator. Hmm. If you take the encapsulator off, the bottles are completely identical. So one of them is Delirium Blonde, and it has a gold encapsulator with a black band at the bottom with Blonde written on the encapsulator, and the other is Delirium Black with a black encapsulator and a gold band at the bottom with black written.
Right, so yeah,
so it's basically
you could be easily confused.
It would, yeah,
and it's almost
and
deliberate.
They're quite not different on the ABV. They're both 11.5%.
Ah, well, there you go. Nothing really.
You wouldn't be disappointed on that.
Yes. somebody's texting to say, now I know why I get a soapy taste in my mouth when showering. That's probably just because you have soap in your mouth. I think there's nothing more complicated than that. Is there a test to see how much yeast is in beer? Like, can I bring a stick that I can dip in it that can tell me the levels? I can only tolerate small quantities of yeast, but love my beer, says Dermot.
The best test for, a test that could be done to give you an idea as to the amount of beer in, or yeast in beer, is to look at the clarity. And if you do that by using the torch on your phone, if you've got a torch, a lot of people have the light that the camera uses for flashes, you can turn that on as a torch and shine it through. If you've got haze in beer, the light will reflect off the haze particles in the beer. Now, that haze can be caused by a few different things. One of them is yeast. So if you've got beer with less than 1 million cells per milliliter, the beer should appear quite bright. And then as you go up from that, you'll have different degrees of a headlight in fog type of appearance in terms of the torch going through it. Some beers would be completely filtered, so the yeast would be pretty much completely removed. So if you've got a beer that's completely bright, the way that they'd normally do it would be under a microscope.
All right, that's interesting. Yeah. That's kind of a useful thing. This is an odd question. What's the story with Ribena in Guinness? The French are all over it.
Have you ever heard of this? It's a thing that used to be done, blackcurrant syrup in Guinness.
Yeah.
And ironically, the defining flavour of Ribena brings us dangerously back to the thing that we started the show with. it's a flavour called Ribes, which is also known as tomcat urine or a tomcat pee.
Lovely.
Again, I don't know the person that decided to investigate what tomcat urine smells and tastes of. Yeah. But but it, the active chemical is the same one. It smooths out the bitterness in the beer, and you get a slightly sweeter flavour to smooth out the bitterness in the most.
Yeah, I suppose it kind of makes sense. Our hashtag, by the way, is Awful Movies. That's based on the conversation myself and Simon Tierney had earlier in the week about the history of the sausage. As usual, it is the top trend in Ireland and was for the last hour or so, I think within a few minutes of Ivan Corliss even announcing it. Philo says, went to see 1917 in the Savoy in Dublin, a nice big screen. It was incredible. One of the best movies I've seen in a long, long time. Thanks for the recommendation, Esther. Loved it, says Philo. Another satisfied customer.
I'm getting a lot of positive response to this one, both on Twitter and through even friends of mine who've been texting me going, wow, where did this come out of? Because I think it's kind of released very, very late in awards season and with less hype than we're used to getting for films around this time of year. So I think people are finding it and getting wonderfully surprised by it, because I think that one shot trick that he plays, Sam Mendes, really feeds into the story so well. And I think that's what's positive about him, what people are taking from it.
I've seen a few things on Twitter as well. They put up there's little snatches of the film that are in split screen showing them shooting people. Was that you?
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
them shooting on the beach.
I thought it was
fascinating.
A fantastic clip, because the split screen shows the actual shot that you see as a viewer. But the top half of it shows, I think it's a guy with a boom camera in a truck, driving ahead of them, kind of ducking and diving from the debris that's been blown up by these bombs, so it just goes to show, I suppose, the risk even that goes into stunt work as well in cinema sets and all that, but it's really interesting.
Especially if you're doing it for real and it's not in front of a blue screen.
Yeah.
When you actually have to do it on a real beach.
And I think
the detractors
for 1917 are saying some of the stuff is digitally done, and I'm okay with that. Like, if you're using the latest technology to tell a story really well and to trick the viewer, with your editing or whatever CGI work you're doing, I'm fine with that, as long as I believe my eyes and believe what's being told to me on screen.
If you can't see the difference, then what's the difference? A bit like The Irishman. 1917 was a brilliant movie. I do wish some of the cameos had longer screen time, though Colin Firth is in it for a split second. I would have loved more Andrew Scott. Still very enjoyable. Says another texter. When is Parasite out? With all the Oscar nominations, I'm mad to see it now.
Yeah, I can't wait to see it. You might remember you read out a text about a month ago.
I thought somebody made it up. It was a horror film or something.
They were just a little bit ahead of the curve, because Parasite is one of the huge stories in cinema. I think, one of the biggest grossing foreign language films ever in the States. It's apparently wickedly funny and quite dark. I'm avoiding reading as much as I can about it till I've seen it. We will be reviewing it. It's out in early February. But there it is, up for a shot at being the first foreign language film ever to win a Best Picture Oscar. It's nominated in the 9 Best Picture nominees this week.
But so. All the nominations, is that simply just it's a good film, or did something else happen that made, the Academy and all that, you're hot for whatever set of reasons and your timing is right, and it might be even something you did deliberately, but it just seems that, they've lucked out with this film.
No, apparently it's just brilliant.
Okay, all right, fair enough. That was it.
Yeah, apparently that's it. And also, though, it's a bit of a damning indictment of the way great foreign language films get shoved into the foreign language film scene,
Sure,
it's like, here's our Oscars and here's the rest of the world category, as far as the States are concerned. So I think maybe if it opens a bit of a floodgate there, and that there more pictures should be considered, and it was great to see Antonio Banderas as well nominated for Best Actor for a foreign language film.
Yeah.
So he was absolutely super in that movie this year, so.
Esther reviewed Seaburg last week. I wasn't sold, I have to say, as I can't picture Kirsten Stewart as anything other than a stroppy teenager. But a friend really wanted to see it, so I went along with her. It was such a pleasant surprise. Enjoyed Kirsten's acting for the first time since Panic Room.
She's very good. She's been doing a lot of really interesting work in the last 4 or 5 years. So if you're still thinking of her as the one, one note character in Twilight, which she very much was, I don't think she was served well by the scripts in those films at all. But she's been doing a lot more interesting stuff, as has Pattinson, as we'll be talking about The Lighthouse in a couple of weeks' time as well.
Yeah. So our two movies today, Bombshell, I think probably people would have some kind of inkling what that's about. Well, certainly there seems to be a lot of blonde wigs in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's about it's set around kind of the years coming up to 2016, when Roger Ailes, the head of Fox News, very savoury man in many ways, I have to say, was accused by one of the key presenters of sexual harassment. And it kind of opened the floodgates and led to his eventually being ousted by Rupert Murdoch from Fox. All unfolding, of course, just a year or two before the Me Too thing happened. So it's really interesting to see that time. But to watch it post Me Too and just see, my God, how much things have changed in the last 5-6 years. You know, it's really fascinating. Its detractors say this one pulls its punches, but I really liked it for, I think it really gets across the insidious nature of sexual harassment in the workplace. And there's no kind of Oscar baiting there, no big kind of shouty scenes. And it's a, it's a little bit vague and a little bit...
which is often the way it happens, actually,
exactly
rather than
the way
it's,
it happens.
It's explicit.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what I really liked about it, actually. Yeah. And the kind of, and appropriately enough for a movie set among in a newsroom, it's quite fact-based as well. There's no kind of big grabbing poor me scenes. It's actually the facts speak for themselves in this film, and that made me quite mad actually watching it. I thought it was very powerful.
And Just Mercy now. That's, yes. I'm not familiar with that one
it's
at all.
It's a good week. It's a good week for new releases. This one's great as well. It's based on a guy, Brian Stevenson. He's a human rights lawyer who took a notion when he left Harvard Law School, a black a very ambitious young lawyer, but, you know, lived in a different world to the Deep South, but took a notion that in the 80s and 90s, that he, when he graduated from Harvard, that he was going to travel down to Montgomery in Alabama and talk to death row prisoners there and see if he could represent any of them in their cases. So it's kind of his story, but it's done in a really clever way because it's kind of told through two of the death row prisoners, a guy by the name of Walter McMillan, who's been accused of the murder of a teenage white girl in a case that has really scandalised the community, as you can imagine. And then another a kind of character we don't see in movies like this very often, which is a guy who is... He admits, freely admits that he's guilty. He put a bomb into somebody's house and blew them up. They died. But he Stevenson takes on his case because he's a Vietnam War vet. He's a post, and he's got post-traumatic stress disorder. He's clearly mentally ill and should not be in prison maybe at all, let alone on death row. So that's a kind of a character we don't see in movies like this.
No,
it's usually
that's interesting.
Just the guy pleading his innocence, you know.
Right.
I thought it was getting a good... courtroom drama, and I would have been happy enough with that, but in the second hour it just spills into something really powerful.
Okay, look forward to hearing about that. John on Twitter, who I assume is a barman, says, I was once asked for a Guinness with blackcurrant, and I was delighted to respond, sorry, we don't do cocktails. So let's... let's move on to our first beer of the day. Tell us about it, Dean.
Right, so this is Delirium Blonde. There has been an amount of barrel aging of beers over the last while. It's become a style that a lot of the high strength beers go into. And one of the things about barrel aging a beer, the previous resident of the beer contributes a bit.
Okay. And what was in these barrels?
Bourbon barrels.
Yeah.
With bourbon, what you've got is that a bourbon barrel can only be used once for bourbon. So then after it has been used, it's available for use for other things, but it can't be used a second time for bourbon. Now, there's an expression, the angel share, which is an amount of the alcohol that seeps into the wood with the beer. It then goes the other way. The beer kind of borrows a bit of that alcohol, and it usually results in the ABV of the beer going up. Now, what you've got, you get a certain amount of that bourbon character coming through. This is a strong golden ale, the first one, the blonde. And you've got that bourbon character coming through, but you've got a real complexity of flavours going on. Belgian beers, the yeast tends to develop a lot of different flavours. And with this, the initial aromas, you get the kind of the bourbon, but there's almond, there's vanilla. The complexity of the beer then comes through and you get kind of juicy fruitiness, so a certain amount of mango. And then the balancing flavours from the phenols from the Belgian yeast ferment come through, so you get white pepper, chili, and so on. Absolutely beautiful beer. One of the things that's weird about it, and I'm wondering, is this just a thing about me being slightly freaky when it comes to tasting beers? But it actually felt like I was getting flashes of different flavours one after the other as I was tasting it and smelling it.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying there.
That you kind of get, you know, licorice, white pepper, one after the other.
You do taste the whiskey, though, or you do taste the bourbon there.
I can't get over how much you can taste taste.
Yeah, it's really there. Yeah.
And
yeah.
there's a sherry Madeira type flavour as well that comes through in it. And yeah, it's a rich beer. Now, the reason for these two beers on the theme, one of the things that drives me mental about Dry January is that a lot of the time the initiatives associated with alcohol, they may have the potential to do well, but sometimes they kind of go off track. If you look at the science behind alcohol and health, it's unhealthy to drink in large quantities. That's very simple. You know, if you drink huge amounts of any type of alcohol, that's unhealthy for you. It's also less healthy to not drink at all unless you're genetically predisposed to have an issue with alcohol. So you have a longer life expectancy by drinking in moderation than by not drinking at all. So the thing that I've got about Dry January is that...
And your medical qualification is?
it's a combination of 35 medical studies that have all been put together to do it.
So they're saying you should drink for a longer life.
They're saying that you should drink in moderation.
Yeah.
Small amounts of alcohol helps your life expectancy, and if you're not drinking at all, your life expectancy is actually lower than if you're drinking.
But I would humbly submit to you, Dean, that a bottle of how big is that bottle?
This is a sharing bottle. This is a 750 milliliter bottle. So three, four people having
a bottle of that is not drinking in moderation. And actually, somebody just went in and bought a bottle of it. It was £35.
It is expensive.
It is expensive.
Yeah. And the thing about it is, if you are thinking of drinking 10 pints of it, it's unlikely that you'll pick this one out.
Yeah. Or it's unlikely you'll survive, probably. This is more like a bottle of wine, really.
The way to think of it is that if you're kind of thinking of going for a Dry January, say to yourself, I'm going to have one glass every 2 weeks of something really, really nice and look forward to it and share a bottle with four people, and that would be the way to do it.
Yeah, okay. All right, so we're going to take a break. What movie would you like to do first, Esther?
Let's do Bombshell, will we?
Okay, yeah. Bombshell coming up after this.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Brought to you by Lidl's award-winning wine range. Lidl, more for you.
No one really wins by suing Fox News.
It's been our experience that once you go public in your job, no one will hire you.
If you're able to stick it out at Fox, gather more evidence, you might be able to sue Ailes himself instead of Fox.
And that is why I'm here, because Marty Hyman told me that over here in New Jersey, I can avoid arbitration by suing Roger personally. He says that you've managed to change the law and that we could call other women and show a pattern.
Will other women come forward?
Yes, they will.
There you go. That's a Bombshell. And I suppose other women did come forward.
That's a really interesting setup there, because that is Gretchen Carlson, like a very well-known anchor on Fox at the time, played by Nicole Kidman here. She's basically got an NDA. So when she kind of takes the suit after she's let go, she's kind of, for refusing his sexual advances over the years, she's found herself going from like top end shows to an afternoon program and, you know, kind of off peak slots. There's one scene where they have a kind of, she's playing to age Nicole Kidman. She's a woman in her early 50s. And there's one scene where she does an entire magazine show with no makeup on to kind of prove a point. And Roger Ailes comes in and screams at her, reads her the Riot Act and says, nobody wants to see a middle-aged woman sweat on television. So that kind of sums up what a savoury character this guy was. But she has decided, because she's an NDA and because she's striking out first, now he had been referred to in a book in 2014 as a known sexual harasser in Fox, but that was denied at the time and nobody came forward. This is 2016, so this was bubbling under for quite a while, I suppose. But because she strikes out first, Carlson, she knew the NDA, she was relying on other women really to take action to prove her case, and that's why she decides to go after Ailes himself rather than Fox News or Rupert Murdoch, and to make it a personal case. She's right, they do come forward, but the complicated, murky nature in how they come forward is what really is interesting, I think, in this film. Because you have Megyn Kelly, of course, the scene, the film opens with the, I thought I was getting a Trump movie actually early on in the film, because it opens with that, you know, terrible situation where Megyn Kelly took him on before he was elected on air about his attitude to women and his demeaning attitude to women. She was like, I'm going to go for this guy. And by hell did she pay for it because he took to Twitter back then when we thought he was crazy. Remember? Now we just go, oh, there he is on Twitter again.
Yeah.
But he took to Twitter denouncing her and you know.
Saying she was having her period. And all,
saying she was having her period and blood coming out of her eyes and mad stuff, really. Just crazy stuff. But also really threatening her job and her position. And Kelly is, like, she's a very powerful news anchor, but she does realise at one stage she's committed the ultimate journalism sin. She's become the story. So she tries to kind of rein back from that, and she does end up doing an interview with Trump on air, following which her own husband, who's played by Mark Duplass in a small but really good role, calls her out for her soft handling of the interview. So that's the kind of, you know, there is a nice texture to this stuff here. It's not all simplistic and Oscar baiting. And I would say the same of Just Mercy this week as well. I put even forward the idea that both films have suffered on the nomination front because of the lack of Oscar baiting. But that's what the very thing I loved about the two of them, you know. So it's written, there's kind of a dark humour going through it. It's co-written by the guy who wrote The Big Short. So you can remember kind of the corporate world and how they kind of managed to layer it with a bit of dark humour, especially early on in the film. So you have Nicole Kidman's Gretchen, you've Charlize Theron's Megyn Kelly, and the third kind of major character in it is played by Margot Robbie. She's a composite character, really, but she's supposed to represent kind of the younger generation in Fox who don't know the buzz about ales in the newsroom yet.
Yeah.
And who, there's one really chilling scene where he routinely gets women to do twirl, as he puts it, before when he's considering putting them on air. And he follows that up with it's a visual medium if they ask anything. He just, with Margot Robbie's character, is a really chilling scene where he gets her to pull her skirt up shorter and shorter and shorter. And you go, are you a pervert now? Are you actually trying to humiliate her? Or is it a bit of both? That's kind of where you are with it. John Lithgow plays him really well. I've never seen a movie suffer with John Lithgow's presence
indeed
in it
not.
Anyway.
No. Yeah.
So that's kind of, and it centres really, Kelly would be the lead. And she's very well played by Theron. It's like she's got all the ticks so right. If you've even seen a photo of Theron as Megyn Kelly, it's astonishing.
Mm.
Some people are saying her performance is a bit too nuanced, but that's really what I liked about it, because this woman, she doesn't come out and support Nicole Kidman's character straight away.
No, indeed not. No.
And she's kind, you know, you don't really know what's going on in her head or what she's going to do. And that's really, she's a perfect anchor in that way, that you, like, the brain's ticking away there all the time. She's a woman at the top of her game, but you don't know what her motivations are or what, indeed, her own,
that's interesting, actually,
her own history is with ales. You know, you don't find that out until very late in the film.
Plus also, this is Fox News. This is, you know, this is Trump's cheerleader channel. This is state TV for Trump land. And even though Megyn Kelly, because she had that conflict with Trump, was seen as being, oh, maybe she's a proper journalist and she's not, you know.
Yeah.
Then she got her show on NBC and then she was fired off that for saying, blackface, what's the big deal?
Nothing
wrong with that.
So,
which was a kind of a comment she'd would be very comfortable in Fox.
Yeah, but there's a funny scene with Margot Robbie's character, even though she's a composite, thinks she's died and gone to heaven when she gets a job at Fox, because she comes from a right-wing Republican family where it's mass in their house, you know.
Yes.
So that's all very interesting, and that's what I liked about it, the kind of underbelly of it, the, you know, you're kind of working out what motivated these women, what's going on. And I have to give a nod to production design as well, because several times during the film I actually felt like I was watching an episode of Stepford Wives. Like, that is very cleverly played. The hair is identical blonde.
Yeah, they're cookie
cutter. It's identical big.
Yeah.
You know, there's competition between the older and younger women. That's all touched upon. You know, the dresses are like, you know, they just feel that you feel like you got these newswomen out of like a machine or something. I think the look of it is really interesting in that regard. I liked this a lot, I have to say. I did. I mean, yeah, you can say it pulls its punches, but I think that made it nicely complicated and nicely murky. Succeeds then in making those women feel lonely, you know, when they do are subjected to that harassment, that they're looking around going, is this just happening to me, you know, which is the absolute power of the sexual harasser in the workplace, you know.
Because I suppose you put up with it, and then you object, then the response is, well, you didn't mind last week or the week before that.
No, I think it's very clever. Yeah. I liked it a lot, I have to say.
Mark, who's listening to us in London, says, I got to watch Parasite a few months back. So good, like the best of the bunch of dark twist Korean movies. They came out a few years ago. For example, Old Boy, An Audition, says Mark. Obviously, he's a fan of the Korean movies. Another texter says, went to see Little Women, didn't like it. Okay, Saoirse was good in the part, but I thought the casting was all wrong. Laurie looked about 14 and all the girls looked way older than him. The girls all just looked too old for the parts and the mother looked too young. It was also saccharine sweet and came across as so false. Well, the original book was saccharine sweet, though.
Yeah, I felt in such a lonely place with Little Women because I did like it, but I was baffled as to the 5-star raves all over the place. It didn't do anything new for me, really. And I agree with the miscasting. I think Timothy Chalamet is wrong as Laurie. And yeah, I agree with a lot of what that texter says.
Yeah. Adam Sandler is apparently raging at missing out on a nomination for Uncut Gems. I watched the trailer. It looks mad. Never seen Sandler like it. Has Esther seen it?
I haven't seen it yet. It is... it's coming. I think it's getting a small theatrical release, maybe this week, maybe next week. And it's going to be on Netflix then in a week or two's time.
Oh,
so it's getting that short run.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Apparently he's great in it. But
apparently so,
he would have to be great in it for me to forgive him the many, many crimes
Sins
against cinema he's committed over the years.
Yeah. He plays a kind of a manic character, so it's totally against type there. Somebody else says, this is going back to Bombshell, I've come to appreciate just how diverse Nicole Kidman is as an actress. She manages to be so different and believable, which is important. Really enjoying her in both the big and small screen these last few years. Indeed, she's had a total...
She's just,
second breath,
I mean,
in her career.
It's a total transformation. Like, I used to regularly tear strips off her here about 5 years ago. There was a succession of terrible films. And the way she's just turned, I mean, I can't believe how often I'm coming on saying she's shown up, she's brilliant, you know, in everything she does in the last few years. And I think might she have got a new agent or something.
Or maybe she's,
you know,
more control over what she's doing. She seems to be more a producer in things and then she has a bit
That's
more
say. That's
definitely
true. That's definitely true. Like the likes of herself and Reese Witherspoon are kind of among the most powerful producers in Hollywood now on TV and film. And I think that's, you know, you're seeing women like that maybe having successful careers and then going over to the other side of the business. And I do think it feeds into the amount of decent roles we're getting for women, coupled with the demand for them from the public, you know.
And I can't read all this text, it's quite long, but someone's texted in agreeing with you, Dean, what you were saying about health and drinking. This texter says, a GP told me the same thing about the benefits of drinking in moderation. Mortality decreases for people who drink moderately. So if you drink in moderation, you can live forever. That's amazing. Right, we'll take a break. One more drink, one more movie after this.
The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
Five 3 106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cent. We have drunk one delirium tremens. We're going to move on to the next one. These are both barrel aged ones.
Both barrel aged ones.
My mate is having an Australian Day party next Saturday. Any ideas where I can get my hand on James Bowag's or Crown Lager?
Borgs was coming into the country and I've seen it pop up every now and then. It was kind of consistently available in the country. It's from Tasmania. But now it is kind of, intermittently available. I know that Bradley's in Cork had it, and I didn't ever work out where they got it from. So it is out there on occasion, but it's one of those ones that you need to check with the off-licence before going to the trouble of going there to see if it's there.
Somebody's texting in to say Uncut Gems, that people were texting in about. It's in Movies at Dundrum, and it's so good. You will forgive Sandler every single thing gone before. The Safdie brothers have nailed modern film. All the minor characters are wonderfully portrayed by almost amateur actors. Do see it, says his text.
No, I've heard it's great, but can I just say, in my defence, I was the one who watched all those Adam Sandler movies,
it's
so
true.
You didn't have to.
Yeah, that's
and
a good point.
Jack and
Jill
is still etched in my brain. Yeah. I can never unsee that film.
There is a post-traumatic stress disorder here to take into account. Texter says, pregnant women back in the day were encouraged to drink Guinness for its iron content. That's true. Women, and even after people had, people would give blood and be given a bottle of Guinness, women who didn't like the taste put a drop of blackcurrant in it. Indeed. And Jimmy, after a long hiatus, has texted back in to say, it's a good few weeks, so I thought I'd text in to remind you all that Bohemian Rhapsody is still shite. Thanks for that, Jimmy. Right, that's our second beer. Dean, is another how does this one differ from the other one?
We're on to Delirium Black. So the first one is based on a strong golden ale aged in bourbon barrels. This one is a blend of two beers. They do a winter style beer, which is sold normally as Delirium Noel, so it's their Christmas beer, but it's a winter beer, a dark ale, has an amount of spice, not from spice additions, but from the fermentation, and then they blend that with Delirium Nocturnum, which is their year-round dark beer, and a blend of the two of those into a bourbon barrel. So you've got two different beers, the bourbon barrel giving a third dimension to the flavour, and a dark beer, so it's kind of different flavours. Burnt sugar whiskey. There's an interesting thing with it. Molasses is the flavour that you associate with dark rum.
And even though
there's no dark rum anywhere close to this, because you've got the spice from the fermentation, you've got the whiskey, the alcohol and the burnt sugar, it kind of combines into an impression of dark
bourbon
rum.
Kind of might be in the neighbourhood of rum
it
type
has a
flavor.
spicy type of character to it. Yeah, again, absolutely delicious beer. Got to taste this about 2.5 years ago originally when they launched it over in the brewery, and then the problem that they had was just having enough barrels and working out how much beer to put into barrels, so this thing, because it was just flying off shelves as it was going out.
And is this one also 11% or is
it's 11.5%? It's a sharing bottle. Do not buy
indeed.
Six bottles of this and think to yourself that you've got a good night ahead of yourself.
Yeah, I must say, I think the bourbon works better in this one than in the other one. You can kind of go with this bourbon sitting on top of lager almost, but this, it's integrated better.
Yeah, and you've got a different dynamic going in so far as the colour of the bourbon and the colour of the beer are the same. So you've got similar flavours going on because the colours are comparable. So you've got kind of dark things. Now, an interesting thing with this, as you drink it, you get a hit of blackberry. So really blackberry juiciness, and that's coming from the Nocturnum that has that. So it's a beer that really is layered and sophisticated. It's got lots and lots of different flavours in it, and each of those flavours come out in different steps as you go through the beer. So
yeah, it's a beer for sitting by the fire, wearing your favourite cardigan.
And sip it over the course of 2 hours.
Yes, indeed. Right, we'll move on to our second movie of the day. It is Just Mercy. Here's a clip.
Rich boy from Harvard, you don't know what it is down here when you're guilty from the moment you're born. And you buddy up with these white folks and make them laugh and try to make them like you, whatever that is, and you say yes sir, no ma'am, but when it's your turn, they ain't got to have no fingerprints, no evidence. And the only witness they got made the whole thing up. And none of that matter when all y'all think is I look like a man who could kill somebody.
But that's not what I think.
Right, that's Just Mercy. Is this based on a true story?
Yeah, it's a really, really good film. It's a film that could have fallen so badly into cliche and again Oscar baiting. But avoids all of it and got nominated for no Oscars. So there's the whole thing there.
Yeah.
But it's based on a real life character who I had the pleasure of meeting interviewing yesterday on the phone, a guy by the name of Brian Stevenson, who has raised the bar for every interview I have to do for the rest of this year. What an interesting man. I think he had him on News Talk this morning as well, actually.
Right.
But he's a, yeah, he was a human rights lawyer who decided as a young man that he was going to take his practice after qualifying in Harvard, that he was going to take his practice to the Deep South. I suppose fighting for justice on the front line, really, in the place that it was needed most. And he paid for that and he suffered for that as well. He encountered a lot of threats and rage in the area of Montgomery, which is nicely ironically pointed out early in the film as the home of Harper Lee and the To Kill a Mockingbird museum is based. And he's encouraged by a variety of characters that if he's, you know, usually white people to go and see this museum before he heads back up to New York, you know, so that's done very nicely. One of the first cases, I suppose there's three main cases in this, which again is a clever filmmaking decision because it avoids being a standard biopic then, because it kind of revolves around these characters as well as Stevenson's character. And the film's almost told more through his eyes than really a biopic of him. But the two most interesting ones are a guy by the name of Walter McMillan, who's played by Jamie Foxx, who was really excellent here as well, really shown up here. He's been convicted based on mistaken identity, really, and really poorly corroborated testimonies like that wouldn't really stand up at all under examination of the murder of this teenage girl. But because Stevenson is played by Michael B. Jordan, we should say, who is just again showing up here, shows up in everything he does. From Black Panther for Marvel to a drama like this to Creed, like he really is terrific. But he is kind of, he takes one look at the case and goes, I'm taking this to appeal. Like, there's not a chance. But, you know, he has to fight to get that appeal because nobody in power in this area wants to exonerate a man who has been convicted of raping a white girl, you know.
Yeah.
This is the late 80s, early 90s. And then the other case to me, which was even more nuanced and more interesting, was that of Herbert Richardson, again, a real life character who's he served in Vietnam. He came back with post-traumatic stress disorder, was kind of forgotten by society and ended up really struggling with his mental health and throwing a bomb under a house one day. And the person living in the house was killed. He is racked with guilt. So he's not one of the many people on death row protesting their innocence. Mm. He feels almost that he deserves to suffer for what he's done. But one day he gets a notification that his execution has been, a date has been set for it. So Stevenson again takes on that case, you know, and this develops in the second hour into something really powerful and graceful and very moving. And it's the punctuation mark is the extended scene leading up to this man's execution, where he actually says to Stevenson's character at one stage, everyone keeps asking me what I'd like today, what I'd like for breakfast, how I'm feeling, what I'd like for lunch. Nobody's ever said that to me in 14 years. And that was actually what this real man said to this lawyer on the Davies execution. So there is all of those powerful little truths that are kind of could only come, you know, with the best will in the world, they couldn't come from the greatest screenwriter. I think they had to come from this man's actual testimony and story. And that's what makes it so special, I think. Okay. I really liked it.
Okay, that does sound remarkable. The winner today, by the way, of our competition, that's the person who'll be spending two fun film nights in Farnham Estate, is Alan McCormack from County Roscommon. The answer, of course, was James Earl Jones. So happy birthday to James Earl Jones. Our hashtag is Awful Movies, still the top trend in Ireland. Didn't read any of them out, but I'll just read out this one because it nicely dovetails with some of the things we've been talking about today. Scrotal reboil, which sounds rather uncomfortable. Here's Annette Freeman to tell us about some good things to do tonight. Nettie.
Whelan's Ones to Watch Festival kicked off today. It's going to be running for 5 days. 60 bands perform over two stages. Whelanslive.com for full information and tickets. Flights by playwright John O'Donovan is on stage over in Innes in the Glore Theatre this week tonight. glore.ie/events for tickets. And in Mullingar tonight, there is limited number of tickets still available for Jason Byrne there in the Mullingar Arts Centre. Call the box office on 044 934 7777.
Good stuff. Thanks, Nettie. Thanks, of course, to Dean and Esther. Always a pleasure. Our production team today: Claire Collins, Michael Quilligan and Anne-Marie Kane. Ivan's up next on News Talk. We'll talk to you on Monday at 2. Have a lovely weekend.